67. Action.
I hit her.
No. Do you want to change the line?
You're doing great, man. We'll get there.
Action. 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 Action.
You have to say out loud. I can't hear in here.
Say action so I can hear her.
Okay. Action.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Yes!
Woo! Let's start the show!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you can choose what you want to watch, when you want to watch it, where you want to watch it, and how you want to watch it. I'm Tom Merritt. And that man right there, who is that again?
Oh, no, me. I'm Brian Brushwood. But don't worry about little old me. You just saw the last half of the trailer for The Disaster Artist, the latest Seth Rogen and the other guy. That's their duo name, right?
Seth Rogen and the other guy. Yep. That is legally his name.
Yeah.
Middle name other, last name
guy. It's all going to be about The Room, and I could not be more excited. A word on the street is that it got a standing ovation at South by Southwest, that there's a lot of heart, and it should be good. It's based on the Tommy Wiseau The Room story.
Well, interestingly, we have someone here today to talk about virtual reality. Which is no way related to The Room, but introducing Nicole Lee back on the show. Welcome back, Nicole. It's great to have you.
Hi, how are you? Glad to be here.
Tom, are you feeling all right? You don't have a fever or nothing?
Feeling great. There's a new medication. It's fine, Brian. I don't know what side effects the doctor
normally you're master of the Segway, but now, much like the previous owner of Segway, you seem to have run off a cliff.
Once you become known as the master of something, you don't have to try anymore.
It's fine.
People are just like, oh, that was amazing. the brilliance of that. That's no. No, but all kidding aside, Nicole Lee is here. We're very excited. And did write up an article for Engadget about streaming baseball in virtual reality and this kind of the state of virtual reality content right now.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about that in a little bit. But I went to San Diego this weekend, did not go to Comic-Con. Neither one of the rest of us went to Comic-Con either. But you know what? We all feel like we're there because our feet hurt and we saw all these trailers. So let's talk about them in the primary target.
See, there's the Tom we know and love.
There he is.
Smooth.
Still got it. We're going to do these in chronological order by the date they are premiering. Defenders got a trailer. In fact, a lot of people say Netflix kind of ruled the roost at Comic-Con. Defenders trailer is not even really a new trailer. It's the same trailer you saw, but they had a bunch of events at Comic-Con. And of course, Defenders coming out August 18th. Any other thoughts on Defenders? It seemed like they were all over Comic-Con, but not a lot of new stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll defer to you, Nicole. Like, are you overly passionate about this? Because, like, looking at this roster, you got four prime. I mean, number one, I'm thrilled to see Sigourney Weaver just being awesome as always. But the four principal characters, we have two properties that were real good and two that were less good. I'll let you argue over which two were two.
I can't say I'm moved one way or the other, to be honest. Is that bad? I mean,
I'm with you. I don't feel any natural chemistry between the four of them in the trailer that we see. And Daredevil season one was extraordinary. Season two felt like they were trying to wedge in one too many setups on there. First half of Luke Cage was great. I didn't even watch Iron Fist. For the first time since this experiment began, Tom, I'm sort of keeping it at arm's distance emotionally. I'm just, if it's great, show me and I'll be all in. But I'm not, the credit is kind of, I don't want to say it's burnt out, but it's like I'm not swimming in goodwill right now.
I think a lot of people felt better about it after Comic-Con weekend. And I was seeing a lot more positivity about that. Even people saying Iron Fist, not so bad when you put him in to the four. So I was actually pretty excited by this trailer. I enjoyed it.
That's such faint praise.
Yeah.
He's not so bad.
I know, right?
Not so bad. He doesn't nearly drag down once he's a supporting character.
I got excited looking at this, especially seeing Sigourney Weaver. So, you know, it's me. I'm always the guy that's the glass is three quarters full, even when it's half empty. So I'm excited about it now. Let's move on to something that I found surprisingly good besides its jokes. Orville coming to Fox on September 10th, put a trailer out, which has got a couple funny moments, but really showing off the sci-fi chops of that series that Seth MacFarlane is doing as a comedy.
Man, I don't want to say this out loud, but yeah, you do. I'm sitting in front of a microphone and the next story is Star Trek Discovery, and it looks like the two are going to come out side by side within 2 weeks of each other. I'm going to call it right now. Orville is ostensibly going to be a parody of Star Trek, but will be actually better than Star Trek Discovery.
Ooh.
A lot of people are getting that feeling, Nicole.
Shot.
Oh, boy. That's fighting words.
Sorry. I mean, and we'll talk about, there's things to be excited about in Discovery, but if I'm a gambler man, and I am, then I would bet on Orville being longer lived and better. Because think about it, there's so much more territory that the Orville gets to go into. It's got this postmodern hook that allows it to go full on Galaxy Quest for characters to say stuff that we actually relate with. It doesn't have to be in this, you know, this super socialist utopian paradise where everybody has moved beyond money or whatever. It's like, it's a blank canvas. Good God. It's a blank canvas, Tom. We have the chance.
And that's the thing, whether your problem is the social aspect or the lack of human conflict that's allowed, which apparently Star Trek Discovery has taken that out. They're like, we can have human conflict now, but whatever. Orville can break all the rules. They can break whatever rule is in their way, which could be awful, right? It could mean that they have no limits, and therefore you don't get those amazing stories like The Inner Light from The Next Generation is always used as the example. But they're also a comedy, so your expectations are at comedy level. And I think it was really smart of Fox to put this trailer out with less comedy. I think in another situation, this same trailer is poorly received because people go, well, it doesn't look that funny. But because everyone trusts Seth MacFarlane to be funny, they've already put out a teaser that showed it to be pretty funny. I think they were able to get away with like, hey, we'll actually have some pretty good story elements too.
Yeah, what say you, Nicole?
We'll see how it shakes out. I haven't really heard that much about it. I've only seen this trailer, so we'll see. Well, I mean, I'm excited to see both shows to see how they work out. I mean, I don't really want to compare it, but I guess you can't help but compare it.
I mean, it's
because
set
they're
up
coming
that way,
out at the same time.
Balloon
so.
Knots just said in the chat what I'm hoping in my mind, which is Dr. Star Trek is to Orville as Doctor Who is to Rick and Morty. That would be nice. I don't even know that I'm aiming that high, but the bar is so low for Star Trek properties for me right now. I'm sorry.
Orville comes to Fox September 10th. Star Trek Discovery coming to CBS All Access September 24th. They've given us a date. There will be 15 episodes, and they've got a fuller trailer which shows more of what's going on, maybe has some scenes that aren't in the first episode, finally. So obviously, from our previous conversation, this didn't change a lot of minds. But Nicole, it sounds like you're pretty excited for this, too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm excited based on what I've seen so far. And I haven't read a lot of the spoilers or anything like that, so maybe that's maybe why my optimism is still up. Who knows? But I'm always interested to see how they take it, you know. And my caveat is that my expectations going in is almost invariably is higher than what it ends up being. Like that's what it was for the last couple of Star Trek series. So who knows? Maybe it'll be great. Maybe it won't. I think the factor for me is whether I'm willing to pay the however much, you know, dollar subscription for CBS All Access or not. That's really the typical, you know.
I mean, here's the problem is that by putting it behind the paywall, by telling people the only way to watch the show is to join a $4 or $5 a month club to watch it on demand, that pilot, the only episode that will air on actual CBS better be so good, better than any of the movies, that it causes everybody to say, oh, I'm suddenly a fan. I got to go join CBS All Access.
That's the problem,
and it's so weird, right? Because Netflix has the exact same problem, but everybody trusts Netflix. Nobody trusts CBS yet, even though the Good Wife spinoff is by all accounts really good.
Yes. Well, the difference is that Netflix has a 5-year track record and an armload of Emmys now. You know, it's like they've earned that trust and respect.
But people CBS were subscribing to Netflix before House of Cards was even made.
Sure.
It was just reruns and movies. CBS has that. It's just not, people don't think of it that way. And the other thing, when you look at paying for a show at $1.99 an episode, the $5 or $6 that you'd pay for the commercial version of CBS All Access is actually cheaper.
Yeah, Gauchem in the chat points out that it should be reiterated that if you don't live in America, this is a Netflix series, not
exactly.
a CBS All
That's
Access.
Exactly.
And I'll bet it'll be great. But to get me to sign up for $4 or $5 a month, I'm not feeling it.
I guess the point I was going to is it's not that you have to pay for a service to get a show you like. That at service also adds a bunch of other things you can access. It's that we've got service fatigue.
Yep.
And we're like, is this worth adding another one or dropping
it's
one
that
I have?
It's not just that. It's that we don't even know whether we like it or not yet. Like for me, sometimes it takes like a few shows, like a few episodes for me to figure out whether I like a show or not.
And
the CBS All Access should have enough other things that you'll be like, well, I'll probably like it. But even if I don't, there's these other things. That's how you feel about Netflix. But nobody feels that way about CBS All Access.
Nobody feels that way.
Let me flip everything around now and tell you one reason that I am positively giddy about this series. And it was dropped in the I haven't been paying attention to the chatter, so maybe this was a known thing. But it looks as though my favorite character from Star Trek, the original series, is in this. It looks as though Harvey Mudd is in this. Did you see this?
Yes, he's in the trailer.
Yes, and his puckish, mischievous, awful quality was fantastic in the first one. If that alone might be worth watching the entire series for.
A couple other things, and if you like don't want any spoilers, close your ears. These are publicly announced facts, but they are about the show. I know how people get. Given you a warning, supposedly, and this was at the Comic-Con panel, Sonequa Martin-Green's character is the adoptive daughter of Sarek and Amanda, who are also Spock's parents.
Oh, wow.
And they said, we'll give you a very good and believable reason why you've never heard of her before.
Outside of the fact that it's the fourth season in a flagging franchise.
No, I mean, they apparently have come up with a good story reason why Spock never mentioned her and Sarek never mentioned her either.
Sure. Is it as good as the reason why we don't talk about the way Klingons looked in the original series?
I mean, Klingons look different now again. And at this point, I'm just like, Klingons are just always going to look different. Forget. I'm just going to not worry about it. There's no continuity to the Klingon Empire. Okay, so Stranger Things had a trailer as well. That returns on October 27th, and it looks like there are some perceptual issues with our hero.
Yeah, so when we left the first season, and again, this is spoiler territory. If you haven't watched the first season, go watch it right now. But there is a strong hint at the end of the first season that Will is not completely divorced from or unchanged from his time in the Down Under. Is
upside
that what they call
down.
It?
The Upside Down.
The Upside Down, right? And
Down Under is Australia.
Oh man, almost as bad that one.
Different stories. Different
story. Will keeps seeing Australia.
He's walking along. He's like just outback steakhouses all around him. Boomerangs and didgeridoos. That's he's like, that's not a knife.
the alternate Australia.
Kangaroos. I really like what they're going for. I like the fact that, you know, they do hold back most of the trailer showing us Eleven. And when we do, you know, she's pretty much in the place that we expected her to be surviving in Down Under, Eleven Down Under.
She's making her way in Sydney as a waitress.
I trust this show. We talked about having credit and, you know, credit in the bank to spend. These guys have all the credit in the world. I'll believe them no matter what.
Thor Ragnarok in theaters November 3rd. Another trailer, which I actually didn't expect. And people raving about this trailer, how it's like even crazier than the first one. I'm one of those people who looked at it and was like, yeah, no, it's about the same as the first one. And if anything, makes it look almost a little too comedic. But I also feel like it's meant to be a little tongue-in-cheek metalhead kind of feel. Like it's got that late 70s tone on the title and stuff like that. So I'm excited for it. But Brian, did you get all worked up about it?
No. I'll take the unpopular opinion that I don't think I liked this trailer. I don't think I liked it. Most of it seemed very procedural, like just getting to the next part. All of it was almost all of it was territory that we had explored before, and now they kind of sketch out stuff. But it wasn't like any of the comedic beats were great up until that very last moment with Thor and Hulk talking and Hulk speaking in complete sentences. I really enjoyed. I like, this is the first time in any cinematic version of any of this that we've seen Hulk just talking like a person, maybe not a bright person, but a person nonetheless. And that part was great. Everything else was very middling to me. And I almost feel like I would have been better off having not seen it.
Nicole, what about you?
I mean, I really like the Thor, I don't know, franchise, I'm going to call it. Like, I like the first one, I like the second one. So the third one, you would hope, would be good too. And I don't know, out of all the little side plots that Marvel has, like, I actually really like the Thor, I don't know, story line.
I like the sprinkling, taking a story that is untellable, and putting a framework around it that I totally buy into. Like, yeah, there's celestial aliens.
Yeah.
And something connected to Earth. Sure. Let's go. I'm in.
I get more excited about the Goddess of Death when she's on screen in the trailer than I am about anything else. Yeah. I didn't even find the Hulk Thor banter that funny.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh no. Yeah. I loved it because like, there are so many different iterations. If you read the comic book, and full disclosure, the Hulk was one of my favorite franchises as a kid. And, there are versions where Hulk is full on brilliant. There's times he needs to solve, decoding a bomb or whatever. So in his mind, he just eats Banner and takes over his smarts for a little bit, you know? And it's like any hint of any of that kind of flexibility in the cinematic universe would be a welcome addition to me. I'm all about the Hulk is the star of this. I'm glad it features other people, but the Hulk is the star.
Well, let's go to a movie that has a lot of other people. Justice League, coming to theaters November 17th. It's our first real trailer that has all but Superman in it. And that, of course, is because he's dead.
So, by the way, I did not know. I went this long, and because I never saw Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, complete title of the movie, I never knew that the Superman died.
Dead.
Okay, yeah, air quotes, died, whatever.
Yeah. Quote unquote, dead.
So, what do you guys think of more Wonder Woman, our first looks at Aquaman and Flash, and the rest?
So, Nicole?
If it wasn't for Wonder Woman, I don't think I would be very excited about this.
Ding, 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 ding. By the way, Wonder Woman outperformed Guardians of the Galaxy 2 by $2 million as of this last weekend. It is a higher grossing movie. Wonder Woman was wonderful. She's the star of it, featuring a bunch of other jerks.
I mean, to me, the movie should be called Wonder Woman and Friends. You know, like, I don't even...
The Wonder Friends.
The Wonder Friends.
I don't really... I mean, I'm pretty
positive about Flash. I'm a big fan of Flash.
Okay, all right.
And I like that they're making him kind of the comic relief. I think that's fine. So he looks promising to me.
Aquaman looks kind of interesting, I guess.
Aquaman?
Jason Momoa?
I love Jason Momoa. He's my favorite Dothraki.
Yeah.
I have no idea whether Aquaman was my favorite super friend in the cartoon in the 1970s because I liked that he swam. Like, that was the level of
that's
critical.
Not true.
Even
if that
were
true, you would not admit that.
Ooh, the guy in the water, that's cool.
No.
Yeah, why? Why is that a problem?
You're a braver man than I, Tom. That's very good of you.
Look, when you're 6 years old, you vote for Gerald Ford and you like Aquaman. That's who I was back then. I'm not saying I'm still that person.
Gerald Ford and Aquaman is a team up I would pay to see.
I would have loved that. I would have blown my mind in 1977. But yeah, so I have since changed my taste. And I like that they're making Aquaman look like he has some lore and some reality to him, and he's ancient. Yeah. So right. I guess I'm gonna remain hopeful for that. I'm less convinced about him though.
Well, and I think they're doing a really smart thing with the Aquaman character. They've taken somebody who is a punching bag of a meme, in he's a punchline, right? And then instead, it's like, how do we subvert all of those expectations? Well, it's like we make him an alcoholic, insane, you know, Klingon, basically, right? And then, in which case, it's like, I'm in. However, yeah, I don't know. I like the trailer just fine. It's really weird, man. I almost feel oversaturated when they start to bring in enough story elements that I could piece together, give or take, what the story's going to be. For example, this trailer ends with whoever seeing the shoulder of a caped red hooded person saying, but was it in time? You know, and it's like, okay,
it's Cyborg Superman.
And it's like, who is that? And I wonder which act he shows up at. Could it be at point where they're at their lowest? I don't know.
I didn't even need that scene to tell me he is going to be in this movie.
Right. It's like, I don't see why they're playing coy.
Yeah. Speaking of playing coy, Will Smith wasn't playing coy. He was all in to Netflix at the panel about Bright, which is coming to Netflix December 22nd. That is a major motion picture, otherwise, except it's not going to be released in theaters very many places. It's going to have very limited release, but it will premiere on Netflix on that day. It's a world where Will Smith plays a cop. That ain't new. But it's a world where elves and fairies and things have always been around.
Nicole, give me your take on this before I chime in, because I have thoughts.
Why don't you go ahead? Because I think this... I haven't seen this one yet.
Okay, so this feels so real. It has, if you ever saw the movie or the television show Alien Nation, it has a strong Alien Nation vibe.
Yes. It
also, I don't know if any of you guys ever read the Pierce Anthony books, Incarnations of Immortality. This is a world where both science and magic coexist. You might have a wristwatch on, or you might have a magic sundial on your wrist. All of it boring to its inhabitants and fascinating to us. This brought up in my gut so many of those feelings. I loved everything I saw about it. I'm fascinated. The best stories to me are the ones that keep me asking questions long after I've finished. And I feel like I'll want to live in this world long after the movie ends. I'm very, very bullish, very excited about what I'm seeing.
There is a thing called elf punk, which is this genre.
Mm-hmm.
You described it so well there as... it's a fascinating to us as outsiders, but to them it's boring because it happens.
Right.
And Unshapely Things by Mark Delfranco is a great, fast read. Takes place in Boston. If you want to get introduced to that concept, we did it on Sword and Laser. I think it was like our seventh book. It was really, really early on. But this gave me that reminders of that as well.
Yeah.
Nicole, how do you feel about this now that you got a little background on it?
I love this kind of juxtaposition of like the normalizing of fantastic things, like, you know, the fact that these creatures are part of our everyday lives. I mean, I love those kinds of stories anyway. Like, I love those kinds of books and novels. So I'm very interested to see how this works out and to see how they you know, maintain the magic and wonder of it and yet still make it like a normal thing in this particular universe.
I don't even mind that they're sort of playing to the playing to type by having Will Smith essentially reprise an amalgamation of so many of his previous characters. Like, if you're going to introduce a chaotic vector like this magic and science fusion world, then give me something I can hold on to and understand, like the structure of a Bad Boys 2 kind of setup, right? I don't know. I'm very, very optimistic. And the good news is, unlike CBS All Access, I already have Netflix, so I'll definitely see this.
How did you feel about the Westworld trailer, which did not give us a date, just saying Westworld's coming back in 2018 sometime. And the trailer was essentially all of the hosts walking around shooting people.
So fun fact, an inside joke between me and Justin Robert Young was because in spoiler territory here. If you watched Westworld binging straight through, You probably enjoyed it quite a bit. If you watched it week over week and had a connection to the internet, you probably got frustrated with how early some of the big twists were telegraphed, how everyone was talking about it, and it took forever to get to that point. So we were joking about how, like, oh, how will you feel when you find out that the real villain is the piano? And sure enough, the fact that it began with the player piano tickled me greatly. This trailer shows essentially nothing. It tells us nothing new. I think it's very curious to have a show like Westworld where you spend an entire season leading up to a pilot, because really the last episode was the pilot for the series. Everything else was just, you know, leading up, backstory. But with that in mind, sure, Dolores looks pretty badass, riding a horse, shooting people.
Nicole?
I think I was caught in that same situation that you described, Ryan, where I watched the first few episodes sort of as the TV show was on and just got really bored and tired of getting all those things. So I kind of haven't watched it. Because I've been sort of saving it for a binge.
Well, I think you will enjoy it a lot as a binge-worthy experience. Because
should we commit to binging season two instead of watching it as it is released?
I don't know that I'll be able to do that. I think my latent enthusiasm is enough that I'm going to watch it, but I will crab about it the entire time. I bet.
I mean, that's a given. I mean, no one's
you, Bryce. Nobody's asking you to stop being Brian Brushwood, okay? Yes. Calm down.
All right, we got one last one before we move on, and that is the actual teaser, not just a still photo of Ready Player One, filled with Easter eggs. Of course, Ready Player One will open on March 30th of next year, so we've got a while.
I recuse myself. I'll go last.
Brian is very close to not only the source material, but the author of the source material. And I know he has thoughts, but Nicole, what do you feel about Ready Player One so far?
So I haven't watched the trailer, but I've read a lot of the feedback on the internet. And it seems to be very mixed. And I've seen like clips of it. I've seen like the Iron Giant is on there. So that's really cool. And Akira, lots of cameos, right? Really checks all the boxes. So I'm interested in seeing the movie, but I am not familiar enough with the book to know whether it's true or not true or good or not, that it's different from the book, or whether it's the same or different. So I can't really speak to the book side of it, I guess.
Tom?
Brian? Okay, no, I'll go. Honestly, I saw this and was like, yeah, okay. I don't have time to sit here and find all the cool Easter eggs. I caught a couple of them on my first way through. I know I'm going to enjoy it because I'm predisposed to want to enjoy it. And it's a sci-fi movie and it's got a giant robot and it's based on a book I love. So this neither added nor detracted from my enjoyment. And I wish it would have added to it, but it didn't.
Okay. So full disclosure, if you haven't heard, because I mention it at every party I can. Ernest Cline and I have been friends for like 2 decades, right? As a matter of fact, for my 25th birthday, they did a surprise party. He showed up and he gave me a bootleg of a download of a screener of Lord of the Rings. I have that VHS tape. It was amazing. So there's no way for me to divorce my opinion of this from our friendship. And all I want is for it to be the biggest thing in all the world. Having said that, this is a teaser. It is not a trailer. If you are Nicole, you probably still have no idea what any of this was, I'm assuming. Is that right, Nicole?
No idea.
Correct. And it does nothing to tell you about the world. It does nothing to tell you about the story. It is a press release that says two things, and both of those things are said only to people who have already read the book. It says, hello, this is the level of production quality that is being put into this movie. If you are worried that it would look bad, worry no more, because look how awesome it looks. Number two, this is the level of energy we have invested to make sure that to get different IPs integrated in this delightful mashup sideways virtual reality universe, right? And in that regard, this is the part that I absolutely adore about this trailer. The trailer becomes an Easter egg hunt which for all the different IPs, which, by the way, is the literal plot of the movie. You actively engage in what the movie's about. And if you've already read the book, then you're only double sold that it's going to be this fun and you're going to watch it again and again and you're going to go to Reddit and you're going to read all of the different things that you missed. That I am cautiously I'm cautiously anarchistic about it.
Yeah,
about that.
No, you really are. Cautiously anarchistic, of course, a phrase first coined at the Electric Lounge during one of Ernie Cline's poets.
That's right.
You know, actually, when you put it that way, I think it is pretty brilliant. And the reason that it didn't change my opinion is that I didn't feel like I had time to look for all the Easter eggs. So it's me being dead inside, not the trailer's fault, because it is genius to do that for sure.
Right. Give or take.
All right. Well, let's take a moment here to thank the folks that make this show possible. Our corporate underwriters at all of you, patreon.com/cordkillers. We have no corporate underwriters unless you happen to be a corporation and back us on Patreon. That's the only way we fund the show, Brian.
Yeah, man. Patreon has made a miracle happen. If you're an independent creator like us, then you know how valuable Patreon is. If you go to patreon.com/cordkillers, not only will you be able to chip in a buck an episode to keep us loud, live, and independent, you'll get early access. You'll get a special RSS feed to both of our programs, Cord Killers and It's Spoiler in Time. And more importantly, you will get the smug satisfaction of knowing that you are keeping down big podcasting. Yeah, ain't no network for us. We're just going it alone. Yeah, big podcasting trying to mess us all up. Why don't you punch big podcasting right in its twin? Take that, feral airwolf.
Really complicated syndication. That's not us. We're really simple syndication. Yeah. That's what we do. And in fact, we have a community-driven site called DiamondClub.tv where the live show is streamed. We do it on Twitch, of course, but then it is rebroadcast on DiamondClub.tv, as are all of our independent shows. And we want to know, if you watch us on DiamondClub.tv, what do you think? What do you like? What do you want? Are there new features? Go take the survey right now, dctv.link/2017. Only takes a couple minutes. I did it earlier today. By the way, express your opinion on a few things.
This is super, super important that you guys jump in and do this. Even if you only once a year pop into DCTV, we have a team of people who are going to come in and they're going to rebuild everything in your image. So make sure to have your vote registered at dctv.link/2017. Take the survey. Let us know what you want.
Let's talk about how to watch all this stuff. So, a bunch of stuff on how to watch together this week, but I think it brings up an interesting question. Hulu's live TV service now available on Amazon Fire TV. So if you're an Amazon Fire TV user and you were thinking, oh, I'd like to do Hulu, but don't have the app for that yet, only had the old Hulu. Well, now you got the new one. You can do their live TV service. YouTube TV launched in 10 more cities around the United States. If you happen to live in one of those cities, now that becomes an option for you. Now that we have legitimate competition, we've got DirecTV Now, PlayStation View, Sling TV nationwide. We've got Hulu rolling out in more platforms. We've got YouTube TV rolling out in more locations. Brian, where do we stand on getting cable over the internet instead of cable?
I was not there for the early days of PlayStation View. Also, I don't watch live the way you did. I don't care about sports the way I hear you talk about sports. I do know that when I hopped on to PlayStation View, which, by the way, was for Scam School, the TV show, since that moment, I've been nothing but thrilled with my PlayStation View experience. I have no doubt that I don't know who's in first place, but I do know that I have now seen with my eyes the irrelevance of traditional cable, like the ability to just add a show to your favorites. And I get to not know when it's airing or on what channel. It just records them all. And every time I go to play it, it asks me, do you want a DVR version or do you want the on-demand version? And I know it's like, well, the DVR version, I'll have to manually pass by the ads, but that'll be fine. I am more optimistic than I've ever been. And at this point, I'm willing to call the death of traditional cable television, and it's just a matter of counting down the seconds until, you know, the last few vestiges of it give up.
And we know if you're not in a place with sufficient broadband, then yes, cable television is still necessary. If you're not in a place that has all of these services rolled out, then maybe it's still necessary. But it is more and more places have bandwidth that is at least sufficient to make these an option for people. Nicole, what how do you feel about this? Because I know you've experimented with a few of these.
Yeah, I've experimented with pretty much all of them, and I ended up choosing Hulu Live TV just based on my watching habits and preferences. And Hulu Live is still kind of in beta, according to what the PR says. So I do experience the occasional connection issues, connection fallouts, which are annoying, no doubt. But I still find it perfectly serviceable. I think for me, the only situation for me right now is that Hulu Live is only available on certain apps. I think I'm only using it through Comcast right now. So once they finally make the jump to Roku, cross fingers, that's when I think I will probably just use that all the time, really.
Yeah, it's on Apple TV as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not on all the platforms yet. And PlayStation View is not immune to glitches. I don't know if you run into this, Brian, but if I do too much fast forwarding and rewinding, like I fast forward too far and then I have to rewind back, I will often confuse View and I have to kill the entire application and restart.
Oh, that's interesting, because I never use the fast forward. Instead, what I do, because you're right, that would be a real-time execution. What I do is I do the 10-second jump, which it allows you to stack those 10-second jumps. So
not
when I hit
all the interfaces have the 10-second jump.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because
and
like,
even when I'm using the 10-second jump on Roku, for instance, sometimes I'll go too far and go back and I'll still confuse the damn thing.
Well, what I love about it on the PC, which is how I usually watch, like watching Preacher, Justin and I got caught up in 3 episodes. And so when we hit break, we would make a bet. It's like, how long for the break? And it'd be like 2:30. And so I just go click, 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 2:30. And then, you know, we'd either see a commercial or not. It became like a mini game, basically.
Have you noticed that they put shorter breaks early and the breaks get longer as the show goes on?
Yeah. Do you know how long they get, Tom? Do you know what the longest break?
Was it like 6 minutes, right?
It was over 5 minutes. Over 5 minutes at the 2/3 point break. It was insane.
But they're doing that to train you not to like, oh, I only need to go forward a couple minutes. And then the next one's a little longer. Like, oh, I hit a commercial. Like,
sure.
It's pretty weird, pretty interesting. So there still needs to be maturity. But let me tell you, man, PlayStation View has come a long way. Sling TV has come a long way. Even DirecTV Now has come a long way in the short time it's been out. I'm sure Hulu is going to keep getting better. I would say in a year, these will all be fairly solid options for people as long as they have the bandwidth.
I got to be honest. If you have the bandwidth, I think there's solid options now. I still haven't brought myself to cancel my Sling TV because I really dig the interface and I have had really good experience with it in the past. I got to tell you, I think we're already there. There's
well,
no.
And that says a lot right there, right? Where you're like, I have two cable companies, you know?
I'm yes.
Keeping them both around because I like their interface.
I hate cable so much that I have two of them now.
I think the big thing I'm ready for next, like, okay, once we mature this and everything's bulletproof, is integrate my DVR recordings on these services into the platform that I'm using. So on Apple TV, they have the TV app, which is really good for Hulu and HBO Now and Stars to tell you this is the next episode you need to watch. But if I'm PlayStation View, like with Preacher, doesn't show up there. Netflix doesn't show up there either. Same thing with Roku. Like I can track shows, but only tracks them on certain services. It doesn't track them on the live services. So I'd like to see some integration that way.
I'm glad that this is a roundabout way to get there, but I'm happy to announce our new show, Cord Doublers, beginning next week.
One cord, double the service. All right. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location, location, location.
Surveillance. Now, granted, our primary target was pretty much entirely what to watch as well. So we're not going to go through a ton of stuff here. But real quickly, I wanted to talk to Nicole Lee about her article up on Engadget.com right now, which is a behind the scenes look at how Intel broadcasts live baseball in virtual reality. It's something we've touched on here and there, but Nicole, there hasn't been a lot of content that isn't a video game out for VR. And you got to go behind the scenes and see how they're experimenting to try to do live sports broadcasts that make sense to somebody with a headset on.
Yeah. So it's really fascinating to me. So a little background, Intel started doing this true VR broadcast back in March during March Madness, during the Final Four stuff, where they positioned, I want to say, seven or so different camera rigs in the stadium to do that VR cast. The thing with where it's just unique to the baseball side of things that they're putting up fewer cameras. I think one by the third baseline, one by the first baseline, one in the high home position, another one sort of like near the Jumbotron for a more traditional broadcast thing. But there But the unique thing with the MLB side is that you can choose which camera you want to look at. So as a viewer, you can choose, I want to watch the game from the first baseline or from the third baseline or from the high home position, which is like right above, you know, the entire field. And you can choose different camera angles, which is interesting, right? And the other thing that's really interesting is that there's also something called a VR cast, which is Intel produced views. So if you don't want to choose whatever camera you want to choose, you just want to watch the game, really, then Intel does have that VR cast where they will do the work for you to choose which cameras is angles are good for you. There are a few different things that I never thought would be an issue, but are issues here. For one thing, there are no commercials, right? So there are long 90-second breaks between innings. What do you do? They actually hired a special commentator and host to like sort of like provide color and to just talk for 90 seconds between innings because there's no commercials. So you can't, but there's nothing to do.
Right? Well, you know what it is? Give me the giveaway that's happening down behind home plate or something, or the hot dog race or whatever.
They'll talk about like, oh, AT&T Park is in beautiful San Francisco. It was built in 19, whatever, you know? So they will talk about the history of the park because it's not the same game every day. They it's every Tuesday at a different ballpark every Tuesday.
So when you're actually at the ballpark pays licensing fees so that they can play copyrighted music that is familiar or whatever. However, oftentimes they don't have the right to retransmit those things, which is why you go to commercial break and you come back and you hear the tail end of "We Will Rock You" or whatever. Do you get the complete, like, you're there in the ballpark experience the entire time?
So that's the thing. As I mentioned, like there are different positions, different camera positions in the park. So the idea is that you're there. The idea is to give you the feeling that you're there. So there's in-game audio, but they also have a play-by-play guy. They actually do have a play-by-play announcer going through like, you know, who the player is and who the history of the team, like how many RBIs this player has had, all that kind of stuff, right? And the thing with the VR cast is that there's also stats on either side of the video, so you can see you know the runs per game or the stats per game on either side of the video. You can see the player names, the roster. That's the thing. There's a view of it on the video right now. So there's that. So you're in the game, you're watching the game, but you can also have all this like information overload, right? You can see the scores and everything.
Can I tell you, like, and believe it or not, as much as I wear my geekiness on my sleeve, there have been times that I've cared deeply about sporting events. I can imagine dropping $50 to be there for the World Series if my team was there. And to I don't want to see no commercials. I want to feel like I'm there the entire time. That could be an extraordinary high-end phenomenon.
So that's really interesting. And the other thing that I thought was a unique thing they had to do for the VR cast was that they're not able to do lower thirds because of all the different cameras and the different syncing of images. They just can't do normal lower thirds.
Which is the name of the player and the averages and all that stuff. You can't put that up down below the player like you could on a flat screen.
But you can. Go ahead.
So what they did was they're doing graphics on the fly, live graphics on the fly, and they make little baseball cards that hover above the player's head.
That's awesome.
So you
awesome.
Know who, yeah. And it's live. So they have to do it like, you know.
Is there a way without spending money that I can experience just what, I mean, I have a Vive, but is there an app I can get to just experience what this looks like?
So the Intel TrueVR and MLB partnership is only on the Gear VR. So you have to use the Gear VR in the Oculus store. But it's free. Mm-hmm. So if you have a Gear VR, which costs some money, of course, you can use it and download it and watch it for free. And it's live and on demand.
So it'll cost you $700, Brian. Go buy a Samsung Galaxy S8 and get the free Gear VR that they offer with it sometimes, and then you're in.
Why not?
$800. But I thought it was really fascinating to see all of the different things they had to do. They have to do the stitching, like they had to make sure the left and the right feet match because it's not automatic. They have to do the stitching. They have to do the syncing. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and if you've ever downloaded a movie to playback in VR, like those files are astonishingly big and they take forever to render, to stitch everything together. Like the fact that they're doing this on the fly and live is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah,
well,
and
I highly recommend
the other
people,
thing that's cool is that because you're visiting a different ballpark every week, they put the camera in interesting locations every week. Like in Arizona, they'll put it like by the pool. Or if they're in Boston, they put it by the Green Monster, you know, the left field, the high wall left field. So it's a cool way to visit different ballparks if you're a baseball guy. So that's interesting.
Awesome.
Well, it gives them a chance to experiment with different camera angles and see what's working and what's not in all the different scenarios.
Yeah,
I would imagine. Hey, folks, if you want to find out more of this, go check out Engadget.com and find the story, a behind-the-scenes look at how Intel broadcasts live baseball in VR. We'll have it in our show notes as well at cordkillers.com. Real quickly, with what we're watching, I've been watching Preacher, Game of Thrones, and Firefly, obviously. Still watching Twin Peaks and loving it more and more as we get past the halfway point in that series. If you want more about what I think about that, go check out damnfinepodcast.com. And then I rewatched season one and most of season two this weekend. And Brian, without getting spoilery, because we'll do that on Spoiler in Time, I have to say it definitely enhanced my appreciation of this episode of Game of Thrones this week, because there were lots of callbacks. Now, some they made clear, like, this is something that he said to me a long time ago. And you knew, oh, okay, they're talking about a previous episode.
Right.
But there was some other little stuff here and there. I'm like, oh, right, that ties directly into what I just saw.
I don't doubt it. It's extraordinary the consistency that they've shown in the storytelling. And in fact, you know, the previously on is an art form unto itself at this point, where it's like they are curating your experience of the show you're about to watch by gently reminding you of key plot elements, you know, because they understand it's been, you know, this happened literally 5 whole years ago in human time.
And there are other things in that season that I didn't notice at the time that were laying groundwork for future events as well, which I forgot when those events came around. So I don't know if that's a weakness or a strength of the show, but it did impress me that they were putting that all together from the start. And it made me think, like, sometimes I think binging stuff is better because you don't forget this stuff and it all ties together more cleanly.
Yeah.
What have you been watching, Brian?
All of the same usual suspects. I guess I'm now paying for, Full screen is the trial. When I signed up for Firefly, I did the free trial through Amazon for full screen, which is, I don't know what I'm paying, $7.99 a month or something.
Don't you have Hulu?
Is it on Hulu?
It is on Hulu.
Yeah, you probably explained that. That probably went over my head. As you know, I'm a big fan of sticking to a comfortable environment, and I saw the F word. I pressed free, and I assumed it would be free forever, even though I knew it wouldn't be. Anyway, caught up on that. We'll talk about that later on. I also watched, and this ties into what Nicole's been watching, I watched the documentary on GLOW, the four or five years before Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, the Genji Kohan show came out, there was a documentary about the ladies of GLOW and what they're up to these days. And it is astonishing how much that documentary plays like a pitch reel for the series, because they describe stuff and it's as though they're describing the beginning of that series. And highly recommend it. Enjoyed it quite a bit. How about you, Nicole?
That's a good segue, because I have been watching GLOW.
How far in are you?
I'm almost all the way through. I think a few more episodes and then we're done. And it's fascinating to me because I'm not really a big wrestling. I don't really get wrestling, I suppose. But my husband, he's really into wrestling, and watching this show made me understand Made me understand it. Okay, I get it now. It's about it's like a soap opera. It's like you know, it's drama, it's story, and it made me understand the human side of it a lot more. It made me appreciate it a lot more. It's really funny, the interaction between the different ladies, and I just thought it's a very human story. It's really funny, and that's really rare, I think, in a lot of shows to be both funny and be human and to have all these like really interesting moments and to be like really just fascinating. Like the whole wrestling side of it is like really interesting to me.
Very cool. Now I know you've been, you also watch a bunch of stuff on YouTube. Do you have any favorites you've been watching lately?
So I put that in because I don't really watch, like my daily watching habits don't really have to do with traditional broadcasting programming. I watch a lot of YouTube. Like I watch Glove and Boots, which is like a Muppet show. I watch a lot of Let's Play, video game Let's Plays that I think are really interesting. And I actually really love watching regular people play games and normal people talk about stuff in their lives and watch little fun shows. I love Good Mythical Morning. I love those kinds of shows. So I don't know what to say. Like I love YouTube.
Hold on, Nicole. Now I don't think I've ever done this before, but so many people have called The Modern Rogue a Good Mythical Morning with more dangerous stuff. And have you happened to watch The Modern Rogue, the series I do with Jason Murphy?
Okay.
All right. Well, I was just going to throw that in the mix. If you enjoyed Good Mythical Morning, but you wish you saw more, you know, pepper spray and pain, then give that a try.
Excellent. Bryce, what are we on the lookout for?
Hey, guys. I had two different people on the same day, almost at the exact same time, hit me up on Twitter about this. And so I ended up watching the first episode today. I think we might have covered it on the show Ozark on Netflix.
I saw that it showed up in the heavily promoted, you know, main page, which, yeah. By the way, I noticed that Netflix does something clever. Not only does it autoplay the video from it, but yeah. Now it actually starts throwing subtitles on there. So like closed captioning, so you can get invested instantly into the story.
For me, it plays it with the audio and I don't love that feature that
way.
Oh,
okay.
The Ozark is kind of cool. It's got Jason Bateman and Laura Linney. He is like a financial advisor, but on the side, he also launders money for the drug cartels. And so the first episode sort of establishes this larger mistake that he is on the hook for, which causes him to take his family from Chicago and move out to the Ozarks.
Yeah.
In Missouri, to set up shop money laundering there as a mixture of like quick thinking to save his life and a shady investment deal from one of his former partners. It's pretty cool. It's very like thriller-y. It's a lot of tension and action. It's almost kind of like Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
in that sense of like
that's what it sounds like. You're seeing somebody descend into a new market.
Well, and it's I think what's different is that at the outset, Bateman's character is already deep within it, and it's through, you know, the establishing events that, you know, his wife finds out and he's got kids and the kids have got to be around it. If not, you know, at some point they find it out. I think it's pretty cool. The first episode was really neat. And I think you should give it a try. That's Ozark, O-Z-A-R-K on Netflix. It's a series also. It looked like a movie. It's a series.
This is the failing of Netflix. They've never promoted the show to me. And I went on my senior trip to the Lake of the Ozarks and we used to vacation at Silver Dollar City. So
why didn't
the
they
algorithm
know that?
Isn't that smart? go check out Ozark season 1 on Netflix. Got something we should be on the lookout for. Believe me, We want to hear from you. Email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Before we get to the front lines, Brian, what's going on with you?
Dude, this is a special week. We had a delay on last week's Modern Rogues, so this week you get two Modern Rogues in the exact same day. Head on over to youtube.com/modernrogue and check out Jason Murphy and I. We actually, this week on Monday, we're teaching you 7 ways to improve any beer, featuring our friends over at the Beerists podcast. It's a good one. It's all of them are good.
Can we tease? Go, can we tease Friday's episode?
Do we know which one's Friday?
I believe it's going to be the thing that we just did.
Oh my God! No, you know what? Here, call out my Instagram. We raced cars. We raced, we did stunt driving. We learned to drive, do stunt driving. We got filthy. We drove a car with no windshield, and we learned from Get Ready, a 12-year-old boy. A 12-year-old boy named Dashton Wolf taught us and blew our minds with hardcore stunt driving. It's amazing.
12-year-old boy named Baby this Friday.
It was a literal baby driver.
On Modern Road. That's amazing. All right, let's check in on the front lines.
Front lines!
Analytics company Sensor Tower reports that Netflix was the top earning app in Q2, up 233% year over year to $153 million. This isn't their total earnings, just what they make in through the app stores. Average revenue growth across app stores is 56%, so they outperformed that. Hulu revenue grew 22% in the quarter, according to the same report.
Man, well deserved as far as I'm concerned. As part of its deal with 20th Century Fox Television, Hulu is getting all episodes of How I Met Your Mother, MASH, NYPD Blue, and Glee, How I Met Your Mother, remains available on Netflix as well.
Yeah, Hulu's stealing a bunch of these shows that you used to kind of think of as, oh, I'll go watch that on Netflix one of these days. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how that helps them. MGM announced a series of 10-minute shows called Stargate Origins, coming to a new site called StargateCommand.co. Site will be home to all things Stargate. There seems to be some confusion over whether you're going to have to pay for this streaming service or not, or if it's just a website with free streaming video, and no release date on Stargate Origins was announced.
That's the problem with being mysterious, is that you leave people with questions that they would like to have answers, like, how can I watch this? Amazon has ordered 2 seasons of Homecoming, an adaptation of the psychological thriller podcast. The TV series will be directed and produced by Sam Esmail of Mr. Robot fame. Speaking of which, when's Mr. Robot coming back?
Pretty soon here.
Yeah, you
actually
think?
Okay. I mean, if I had been
it's a summer
for that
show.
Question,
if I had been if I hadn't have just thrown that at you, then you would know. But
I think it's August or September. It's a summer show.
Okay, right on.
I can find it out.
No, too. Don't worry about it,
Mr. Robot.
It's really.
Oh no! I'll find it. Hey, let's check out our dispatches from the front while I find it.
That's on me. I'm sorry.
It's your impulse to question with my obsessive compulsive need to answer you.
Joe from Madison, Wisconsin writes, I was about to sign up for my free HBO pass to start Game of Thrones season 7, but Google Play notified me that I could purchase a season pass early. I assume the other stores, Apple, Amazon, also have it posted. I haven't seen any news if HBO plans to post episode by episode this year to the stores week in, week out. Even if it was delayed 7 days, that's better than last season when it was delayed a full year to the stores. Have either of you heard what HBO's plans are for episode releases? We have not heard, but that's good intel from the front lines.
And I went and double checked this. They are selling season passes with the words, you will get episodes as they are released. And I would like to know when they're going to be released before I start giving them my money for a season pass, because
I would
as
imagine,
Joe said in the past, and it's in HBO's best interest not to put out these seasons until a year has passed, because they want you to subscribe to HBO Now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Which, by the way, for the record, HBO Now, pretty good value still.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, honestly, if you just want to binge on Game of Thrones, wait until the end of season 7, then sign up for 1 month of HBO Now, watch them all, and then sign back out.
Yep.
Alan from the cornfields of Southern Illinois. Which cornfields, Alan? Because I'm from soy country. He wrote, Tom, Brian, and Hammond. I have 4 daughters, and I still help with car insurance, health insurance, and Netflix. It is no longer the days of getting a job and your parent dropping you off to sink or swim, so they run off my Netflix. I actually had one daughter say she'd rather lose health insurance than Netflix. Oh, to be young. Love the show, although I can't quite cut the cord yet. If Netflix gets pissy, Well, we'll see.
I mean, they have to know, right? Netflix has to know that every hour they have children on their service from their parents' account is another increase in the guarantee that they'll be customers forever.
No, absolutely.
Amar says, Adult Swim has stopped live streaming Space Ghost Coast to Coast episodes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's replaced it with a full-on stream of Rick and Morty. And even better, it streams the episodes in order. Check it out right here. That's adultswim.com/video/streams/Rick-and-Morty.
Mm.
That's great, man. There's like a nonstop Rick and Morty channel, which now I know what will be open while I'm playing Hearthstone.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect for that. I don't really need to pay attention, but I want to have something I enjoy in the background. So
waterfall television.
By the way, Variety reported in March that Mr. Robot will be back in October.
Hey, there we go. Scott from Houston says, hey guys, on the latest cord killers, Susanna wrote in about a cord cutting question for her mother. She mentioned keeping her internet connection and landline. I don't think I've ever heard you guys go into detail about cutting the phone cord, so I wanted to mention a landline alternative. I got rid of my landline years ago and signed up for the free Google Voice number that I forwarded to my mobile phone. That way I had a home phone number I could give out to people and keep my mobile number for a little more private. My youngest son is now at the age where we're able to leave him alone at the house, but he doesn't have a mobile phone. So I bought an OB200 VoIP adapter for $50 and a good old-fashioned corded phone. I could connect it to the Google Voice service, and now I have an absolutely free phone connection at home. This doesn't include 911 services, but that can be added for a small monthly fee. Thank you very much, Scott from Houston. Yeah, I did the same thing when we... What's funny is we gave up our landline and I got an UMA, which was like a $90 unit that had a free phone number that allowed us to do landline stuff. But then very quickly we realized that we never used a landline. But now we're at the point, we too are at the point where the kids are able to babysit themselves. And it bothers me when, you know, they may fight over who's the one person to have a cell phone or, you know, what if they drop it and it breaks and that kind of stuff. So I've not had my UMA connected for a while. I might go back and reconnect it just to take care of that problem.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today.
Not a problem. Always happy to be here.
If folks want to follow what you've got going on online, I know you're twitter.com/Nicole. Is that the best place or are there other places too?
That's really the best place to get everything because I link everything on there.
Nicole, you have the best background photo in all of the Twitter pages I've ever seen. You stepped right in from the future, like right out of a 1980s set. Like in my mind, the only parts not shown are the techno robot background and the T-Rex.
What headset is that?
That was like way back, I think CES 2015 or 2016. I was wearing a Intel augmented reality helmet.
That's amazing.
That lets you see. It was for construction sites so that you can see like the faults in the construction pipes.
Very, very cool. Go check it out, folks. You don't want to miss that. Twitter.com/Nicole. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv. Don't forget to take the poll, the survey, and watch us there Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.